Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Marketing in Times of Recovery. And I am your host, Iowa Bass, founder and director of built environment marketing consultancy, Abass Marketing. Today, my guest is Magnus Strom from Strom Architects, who design one-off high-end residential homes. Magnus always takes a laser-focused approach to his marketing, and in this interview, we touch on how his practice has a very, very specific niche in terms of high-end residential clients. We also took a look at their approach to media, awards and PR, which is, again, highly targeted. And finally, we look at Instagram and Pinterest and the role that that plays in their business and driving it forward. If you like the interview, please make sure you share it with others that who might find it of interest too. It really does help us to spread the word. Anyway, in the meantime, I will stop talking so you can get on with listening. Enjoy the show. Bye. Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of Marketing in Times of Recovery. Hi, Magnus. Thanks so much for coming onto the show. Can you give me a bit of an intro to you and your practice, please?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. So I run a medium-sized architecture practice down on the south coast in England in a little town called Lymington. There's about 13 of us. We specialize in doing one-off houses, and we currently work in the UK and all over the world, really.
And in terms of the projects that you do, I mean, how difficult is it that the fact that they're one-off kind of clients, is that quite a big challenge to always kind of, I guess, keep the pipeline going?
Well, I think, you know, all projects have their challenges, and private clients have different challenges perhaps to commercial clients. It's much more emotionally driven. And the hard thing is that, yeah, you've got to keep the pipeline of work coming, and you can't go and market directly to them because you don't necessarily know who they are. So I suppose you have to have a different approach to many other architects' practices.
And in terms of how do you kind of approach the marketing for your practice overall? What do you do? What sort of things?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we're a niche practice, and we're trying to, I read this book by, I'm sure you know, Seth Godin, a marketing guru. Yeah. And he was talking about the smallest identifiable market. And if you can, you know, you don't need to market to everyone. You just need a very few select people that's going to give you work. I mean, the best example I can give is someone like John Pawson, for example. How many people want to have a white minimal house that only got white and a bit of limestone and a little bit of timber if you're lucky? How many people want that and, you know, pay a lot of money for it and so on? There's not many people, you know. If you look around the world, say it's 100 people a year that want that kind of house in the world. But, you know, half of them are going to go and call John Pawson. So he's kind of got that smallest identifiable market really kind of, you know, identified, and then he works in that niche and he doesn't need that many clients per year. And I think that's really what we're trying to do, to really kind of focus on that small sector of people that we know want what we do. So it's kind of, and how do we get to those? I mean, we can't go and just call people or go knocking on doors and so on. So for us, it's very much about creating some form of brand awareness. So you know, word of mouth is kind of, it's not someone saying like, oh yeah, you should, you know, I did this house with them and you should go to them. But it's more that someone has seen us on, for example, the internet or on Instagram or on some publication, and then they recommend it that way. So that way, quite a lot of things happen. But for us, the biggest driver is the internet, Instagram, but also Pinterest, funnily enough. Because we always, and when clients come to us, they always have Pinterest boards. So what very often they do, they start selecting all the work that they really like, and they're doing a Pinterest board. And then they figure out who's done all of these projects. And then they go like, okay, so this is Strom Architects, this is Strom Architects. And then they ring up, call us.
And are they pinning stuff from your Pinterest boards, or is it mainly for magazines and kind of things like that?
It's mainly from, I mean, we've been really slack with this, actually. We used to have, on our own Pinterest, on a Strom Architects one, we used to put up all our products and so, but we've been quite lazy with it. Yeah. But as soon as the work is out there, you know, you can pin from the website, et cetera, and it's kind of doing its own thing without you actually doing anything.
So it's organic.
Kind of, yeah. And it's great. And, you know, it's one of those things that, at the moment, we haven't focused on it because we have other priorities at the moment, and the pipeline of work is kind of working anyway. So it's not something we have focused on, but it's something that I know that we need to do more and work with that more, engage more with it. Because all our clients use it.
But it's quite interesting that, because it's like, I guess when you're looking at some of the titles like Deezer and you look at some of their boards, they've already got like a million followers and stuff like that. So that audience is already there. So in some ways, you targeting those types of publications means that your work is going to end up on those boards anyway.
Yeah. And of course, you know, you said Dizine, for example, that's something you really want to get published there and it really helps. And you can see how your website hits, you know, spike after that. And ArcDaily, for example, or Architizer and so on. So all of those online platforms really help.
And in terms of kind of dealing with those types of publications, because they're quite, I mean, they are really high profile ones. How have you kind of built that relationship with them?
In the beginning, I think that, you know, when it was with Dizine, I mean, because, I mean, many, when all of this kicked off, when was it, you know, 10 years ago or so? It was when I set up. It was, so much was going over to digital from online print. So suddenly you had people like Dizine, for example, they didn't need, you know, two products to publish per month. They needed to publish four products per day. So suddenly the hunger for products to publish was much higher. So that meant that what we did very early on, that I think was a really key for us, was we invested in the best computer generated images, renders of our products that we could possibly afford. And it took a large chunk of our fee. But that meant that we could get it published. So it went published on Dizine and stuff even before it was built. I don't think they do that so much these days. But back then we could get, you know, houses published that hadn't been built. And that worked really well. And that kind of then became, you know, not viral, but it certainly made the rounds on the internet and so on. And that really helped in generating and raising that profile.
That's amazing. So I guess, do you think it's harder for architects to get in those publications these days, or do you think it's actually easier?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I think that it helps if you've got relationships, people that know you, so you can kind of drop something to them, almost private note saying, oh, I've sent you this today, and it's like you keep your eyes open for it, you know. There was people at the CME used to have a very good relationship with, but, you know, she's moved on now, I think. But so it certainly does help. But also, if the work's good, it speaks for itself, and then they want to publish it.
That is true.
And I mean, yeah, I mean, that comes back to another thing. I listened to this podcast. It was your podcast, wasn't it? But you had Dave Sharp on.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah. And saying that how Instagram is trailing off, and it's been trailing off for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's not something that we find at all. But also Dave was saying, like, unless you have a really strong portfolio that's very visual, you know, if you have that, then Instagram really works for you. And I think that for us, it does, because when you look at the private housing market, Instagram, there's lots of homes, properties, you know, fashion, cars, boats, yachts,
so
whatever.
Visual,
you know,
art,
you can
isn't it?
Yeah. It, but it's very visual.
Yeah.
So if you're an architect specializing in hospitals, you know, you wouldn't necessarily use Instagram because it's not the kind of the right place to market it. But for houses and homes, it really works.
Yeah.
So I think that therefore it's been a huge, as I wouldn't say it's been a huge, but we really kind of, we have worked on the Instagram to really kind of keep it up. Yeah.
No, I think though, I mean, definitely in your projects are so visual as well, but you also, I guess you also, as well as investing in CGIs, it's also the photography that you have as well, which captures, you know, the project. So you obviously spend a lot of time on getting the look right and making sure that aesthetic works as well. So, I mean, in terms of photography, are there any kind of hints and tips in terms of what you do or how you tackle that?
Yeah, I mean, the first advice is basically to hire the best you can afford.
Yeah.
And we worked in the beginning with, we tried lots of different photographers, and every time you got the photographs back, you thought like, oh yeah, it's good, but it doesn't quite sing, you know, and it was something that you think like, oh, that could have been better. And, you know, we tried lots of different people, but when we shot this house called Island Rest on the Isle of Wight, the client had a connection with Nick Houghton from Houghton and Crowe.
I've worked with them before,
And, you know, they're maybe, I wouldn't say that they're rock stars of photography, but they're certainly up there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
it was a little bit more expensive and so on. I thought, oh, this is expensive. But then I thought to myself, hang on a second, we're spending far more money on CGI than we're spending on photography. That's kind of wrong, isn't it? So I thought, okay, let's do it. And it was just fabulous to work with Nick. I mean, he's so talented, and the way they see things and how they just, you know, put it all together. And it was just a joy to work with them. And then see the photographs, it was just like, yes, when you get this. So that's really amazing. You know, we've just shot a project in Sweden as well, but we used a photographer based in Sweden. Yeah. Called James Silverman. It's also very talented. It's actually a Brit, but he's lived in Sweden for a few years, and he's been mostly, you know, doing self-commissioned work. So he's been traveling the world and photographing houses in South America or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And but because publications have changed, they no longer buy stories, right? So they want everything for free. So it's got to be the architect's got to pay for the images, and then. So it's changed. So he started shooting like that, and that was an interesting shoot. So we're just like going through all our photographs at the moment, and we're going to get some hopefully good images soon.
And what role does video play in what you do now in terms of how you market? Are you using that more, or are you going? Is that something you're aiming to do?
We are aiming to do it. We haven't done it at the moment. We looked into it a lot, and I think that there are certain projects that lends itself to it more.
Yeah.
But the websites are going that way. And when we did our website a few years ago, it's all set up so it can very easily take video. So we're certainly going to do that, because for us, it's again about portraying the lifestyle, because you can do that so much more through video, and you know, just a sense of arriving at a house, or you know, the life that goes on there and so on. So that's definitely something that we are looking into.
Actually, I've got a question, because I mean, you do one-off houses. I mean, do your clients often say you can't photograph these houses? Because that's what often happens, and kind of, you know what I mean, on high-end projects.
It doesn't happen often. We've had one project. We just recently signed a project in Sweden, and they said we don't want you to publish it.
Oh wow!
They said like, well, you could probably put it on your website, but you can't publish it. But with all our projects, we always call them something different. So the project name that you see on the website is not what the houses actually are called, because it wouldn't take long for you to, you know, have a house name, or and you can just find it online or on, you know, on Google or through a planning app or whatever. And as soon as you can do that, you can pinpoint where the house is. And then, you know, as clients become, you know, some clients are high profile and they don't know, you know, don't want people to know where the house is, or et cetera, et cetera.
And then how do you take the names for your projects? So is it like influenced by the location, or how do you choose them?
It's quite random. It changes. It changes, you know. Normally it's got something to do with, you know, the location or the feel of it, or the place of it, or something like that.
And I guess as things are starting to open up again, awards are kind of coming back, and award season is coming back. So how do you kind of tackle awards? Because that's another part of your kind of marketing strategy overall, isn't it, and what you do?
Well, I think I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with awards in a way that, I mean, the Quest we did a few years ago, we were extremely successful with, and we won 2 RABA awards, and we were on the shortlist for House of the Year.
Yeah.
Which we lost to Caringwood. Strangely enough, I went to Caringwood a couple of years ago because they had sold it and the new owner wanted to refurbish it and extend it because it didn't work as a home.
And it won an award.
But in the end, we didn't do the job. So, I mean, at Quest, I think we picked up 7 awards or something like that, and we won British Homes House of the Year, and we won that and for another project as well. So that's very, you know, that's great. And it kind of adds some form of, you know, we don't design projects to win awards, but it helps when a client, you know, can see like, oh, they have done this and they kind of have won the awards for it. And it's kind of some form of, you know, feather in your cap that they will trust you in some way.
Yeah,
but I think you also need to remember that these awards, they're businesses, a lot of them.
Completely. It's a cash cow.
And it is absolutely, you know, you got to do this and then you got to go to the dinner. And by the time you've done it, you spent, you know, a couple of grand or something like that. Or if you go to WAF, for example, you're going to send 2 delegates, you know. And I've been, you know, and it's massively expensive. But, you know, I've been there twice. The first time I did it, we went to Singapore I had a great time. And it was really good. It was very early in our practice and, you know, met lots of people and had lots of fun, you know. it's not often you hang up on top of Marina Bay Sands having drinks with the guys that work at Marcy Kogan. But
you're paying for it.
You know, yeah.
let's not go around that.
And then, you know, and then we went back to the one in Berlin where, it's a good laugh, but it also, it's a networking event as well for the industry. And you're kind of hanging out with your peers and you know.
I was going to say, is that the kind of thing where you'd find actual clients or is it more of your peers there?
No, we didn't find clients there and so on. No.
Okay. So you can't justify that as in do that regularly because it's a huge cost compared to other things you could be doing.
It is a big cost. It's a big cost. But, you know, I think that awards is kind of, it's very political as well. Some awards more than others. You've got to have the right, if you put it this way, if you do a one-off large house, it's not the most kind of type of award that does something great for society or for the population in a certain way because it's a very selfish and indulgent thing. Just go and look at the zine in the comments section of any private house, you know, and you can see that, you know, sometimes the vitriol that just comes because you've done a luxury or well-designed house. And I think that's a bit sad, but it's kind of inevitable in society. So I think some awards are very political and it's got to have a lot of, you know, it's got to tick certain boxes to just be able to be qualified for it. Some awards are more like that than others. So I think you've got to look at which awards you submit for and which you don't submit for.
So you're kind of on the fence of awards then. You kind of see some benefit, but you're not 100%.
I think it's just, you know, you can kind of think that, you know, in one award, you won House of the Year. And you think like, wow, fantastic. Yeah. And then you're not even shortlisted.
For the
same project or some other ones. And you go like, and it's kind of, this is both an award for the one of House of the Year, but so you start thinking that, oh, why is that? Well, it's because you can see the projects have got a completely different agenda and it can have a different aesthetic. Yeah. And sometimes you look at the judges who's judging that year as well.
And that's kind of what their bias is or what they're kind of really into, I guess.
I think so.
We're all biased.
So, yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. And I guess just moving on. So obviously, we've had COVID for the past 18 months, probably more than that now, March last year.
Yeah.
How has that kind of affected kind of how you've marketed yourself and what you've done? Because you were already online, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't actually changed anything for us, which I suppose is quite unusual. When COVID hit and lockdown started, there were 7 people of us in the practice.
Yeah.
And the whole residential, private residential has really kind of gone crazy. So, we doubled our size in 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And that's come, you know, that's come with growing pains. And we're working currently with a business consultant. It's a bit of a restructure, but it's lots of excitement going on and so on. The biggest challenge for us has been to get the work done, actually, all the work that we have and the work that's coming in. But it's not really the pipeline of work coming in that's the issue for us at the moment. But in terms of keeping up the marketing, it's actually the biggest challenge is content creation.
Yeah.
How do you create enough quality content to put out on, for example, social media?
And my question for you is actually, what's enough for you in your mind?
It is. We had a period when I posted on Instagram, for example, we did a post every single day and we were really active. And we could see, we got, you know, your following, it just increases so much. You could do 100 new followers a day organically.
Wow.
And that's extraordinary because then the algorithm kicks in and it kind of starts recognizing that you're doing the right thing. You comment on the right things and you use the stories and you use this and that. And it suddenly slots in and it really starts to work hard. But lately we've been kind of really, really busy and never glamorized busy, but we've been fortunate to have a lot of work on. So it has taken a little bit of a back seat. But we're going to have so many projects. We have, you know, we just photographed the new projects. We have loads of images coming out soon. We have 3-4 projects we are in CGI rendering at the moment. We got another 3-4 projects that we're going to photograph next year. So we're going to have plenty of content available.
Yeah.
So, but it's like yeah, it's about keeping the quality up of the content. I don't want to put out stuff that I'm not happy with. You can use stories in a completely different way to post things that are just like a reflection of, you know, you're on site,
progress in that, yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. And that works well to keep the whole kind of line. But that's more for your current followers, I suppose, rather than people who don't follow you. Hmm.
Certainly is, but I guess that's a difficult. I mean, especially with Instagram, there's so many different formats, you know, and it's always kind of which ones do you prioritize and which ones do you use? And like you say, it's kind of it can be a beast in itself. It's even just as one platform. Do you use things like? Do you use anything like LinkedIn, or it's not your platform? Is it literally Pinterest?
Well, LinkedIn. Instagram? I've actually recently started doing more LinkedIn, and I mean, as you say, like Facebook has dropped off the face of the earth, I think.
Oh, if they kill anything organic, it doesn't work. It doesn't go anywhere.
So you post something to, you can post something to Instagram and you post it up, you know, well, it goes up on Facebook anyway, but it's not something we actively monitor and work on.
No.
Yeah. And Twitter, I think Twitter doesn't work for architecture in kind of that work. It's great if you want to have a chat with people or have a moan.
Yeah.
Because I think Twitter is angry and moany. So I really, you know, when we started the business, you know, we built up a real following and we got, you know, we had quite a lot of followers and so on. But it's just kind of, for me, it's not my thing, you know.
It can be bitter, yeah. It can be quite
LinkedIn is something we started doing a lot more recently, and the engagement we're getting from that is pretty exciting. Because
so who would you be connecting with? Which audiences are you looking to connect with on there? Because it's a different audience to Insta, isn't it?
I think that you connect a lot with other professionals, and it's a lot of peer-to-peer. So that's kind of about, again, it's about raising profile and so on. But it's hard to say as well. Like, I mean, I don't know enough about how the algorithm and so on, because obviously you've got your own kind of account and then you've got a business account, and we're just trying to grow that business following a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess are there any kind of particular tools or systems that you use or for your marketing to kind of make it easier to do? What kind of processes do you go through?
The only thing that we did last year was we signed up to Bowerbird.
Yeah.
And we put out a project and that worked really well. The difficulty perhaps was that suddenly you got like, oh, we all want to do this, but we all want exclusivity of it and so on.
Yeah.
And then if they didn't get it, they weren't interested and so on. So I felt like you still had to manage it quite a lot. It's not just like you can't just upload and off you go. I did upload some old projects and just saw them kind of getting republished. It was quite interesting. That really didn't take any work. Suddenly you see it, you know, pops up on Instagram or, you know, and then someone's published it and on their online, you know, web page or something like that. But Bowerbird is really the only kind of system like that we've used. But I think that when we do publish a project for something, we're normally trying to get a print exclusive and a digital exclusive before we let it free. And the print exclusive, I don't get this, but for example, why would you want the print exclusive in the Architects Journal? I don't.
Some people do.
It might be different for other people, but for me, it's like, I don't want to, you know, that our clients don't read the Architects Journal, do they?
No.
They read the Financial Times, How to Spend It, or a home supplement in the Times magazine, or, you know, wallpaper or something like that. That's where kind of the excitement is for us.
So how have you kind of, I guess, learnt your marketing? How have you kind of come to the conclusions and the strategy that you've come to?
I think it's a little bit a combination of trial and error.
Yeah.
I think it's also just sitting down and thinking about where our clients are and what the kind of magazines they read and so on. And also, I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm out driving, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. So do I.
A ton of yours the other day. So now when I go to client meetings, I listen to podcasts or, you know, I've listened a lot to Seth Godin.
He's got a lot of podcasts, hasn't he, Seth?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of nuggets in there that, you know, are worth a lot. And, you know, and also the architecture, business of architecture and. you know, I think that we listen to a lot to those to podcasts, and I also done a lot of reading, marketing and business books, and all of that kind of comes together.
Have you got any favorite books?
Yeah, this is Marketing by Seth Godin.
Okay. I've not read it, I have to admit.
Great. There is, what is that? Gino Wickman's, what's that one called? Oh.
I did put you on the spot here, so that's fair enough.
Yeah, Gina Wickman's done a book that I read recently. It's more about like how to be the entrepreneur business model. Very interesting. And I also recently read, last year, Greg McKeown's Essentialism.
Love that book. I'm going to check those out. I will have a look. I don't always read that many marketing books.
And also, I mean, this book called Surrounded by Idiots.
Oh, I think I've heard you mention that before. So
that's really interesting. It's really talking about different personality types and, how we react differently and how we think differently and so on. But okay. I suppose that's more business related in a way. You know, it helps me in understanding clients and staff as well, and you know how people are different.
But also, I think that comes into marketing anyway, because people react differently to different things. And I think understanding that whole kind of business angle, I think, is so important because it's like, actually, why am I going to do awards when it costs me $10,000 to get there? And actually, you know, I get more bang for my buck from this activity. Yeah. And I think it's all of that is all connected to business and what you choose to do. And I think so. I think there's always this connection, and it shouldn't be disjointed at all. So in terms of if there was a practice starting out and you had to give them one tip in terms of getting their marketing going and to be successful, what would it be?
I mean, I don't think it's a single kind of line for it, but I think that the usual cliche things, you've got to be authentic, you know. You've got to know what you're saying. What's your message?
Yeah.
You know, when finding your voice. And it can be so different depending on what you're doing. But for us, I always had an interest in private houses. And very early on, we decided that we weren't going to try on any other work, because we've done some other work, but it wasn't what we should be doing. So, you know, at the moment, our message is very portfolio-based.
Yep.
And you know, some people have a message that's completely process based, but coupled with our portfolio based message, I think that we're really developing a what we call a strong way of working. This is the way we work. So when we attract clients, we're saying, this is the way we work. We know this works.
Yeah.
You know, very often client comes like, oh, I want to do it this way, I want to do it that. And we just now say no, because we don't want to have the fight anymore on projects. And sometimes 90% of the time the client goes, oh, I completely understand that, it makes sense. But you know, sometimes it doesn't work and they go away. So, but then, you know, then we feel like we kind of missed out on, you know, we've skipped a bad project perhaps.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say?
In terms of your tip.
Yeah.
So it's your audience and your message and being authentic.
Yeah, it's being authentic. And then the other thing is like, the really important thing is like, you know, the quality of the work you put out there. For me, that's kind of, that's absolute key, you know? And so when we started out, we knew what we wanted to do. And so we stayed small for quite a long time, and we turned down work because it wasn't what we wanted to do. And we said like, well, if I do take on this, we're going to fill the office with work we don't want to do, and then we might not be able to take on the work we actually want to do.
Yeah.
And also if we did that work to kind of stay in business, then we didn't perhaps publish it. So we have, you know, I know some other people are set up at the same time as we did.
Yeah.
And they kind of grew a lot quicker than we did. But now we've kind of gone the other way, but we have overtaken them in a way, because we have a much more defined niche that we're working in, and we're stronger, got a better position in that niche.
Yeah.
So I would just say, like, you know, you got to focus on what it is you want to do, what that tone of voice is and what your message is, and then just really kind of work on that, you know. Don't do a scattergun approach when you can do like a rifle shot.
On that lovely note, thank you so much for your time, Magnus. It's been awesome interviewing. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the latest episode of Marketing in Times of Recovery. And I'm your host, Iowa Bass. If you want to find out more about the bi-weekly show, do check out the show notes, which will give you more information about who the guests are and all the things we've covered. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on an episode. Until next time, bye.